Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Teich. Friday on the show, we spoke with Pulitzer Prize-winning author Paul Harding about his latest novel, Enon, which dealt with a parent's loss of his only child. The book is a challenging read, and it's for an adult audience. Writer Patrick Ness also takes on death in his latest novel, More Than This, but he writes for young adult readers. Ness's protagonist, Seth, dies in the first sentence of the book, but the story is just beginning. Ness will fill us in on the details in a moment. We learn, though, in the story that Seth had just moved from England to the United States. That's the reverse direction from the author, who grew up in the States but now makes his home in London. Patrick Ness tells Lake Effect's Bonnie North that having a foot in two worlds is actually pretty important for him.
It's a good place for a writer to be, I've always thought, being an expat, because you're always a writer is good on the edges and observing and looking. But what happens is in the first three pages, he drowns and he dies unambiguously. And there's no way that this is a question mark over his death. But then he wakes up and he wakes up in an abandoned world. He wakes up in the neighborhood that he grew up in England, instead of America, where he lives now. And it's empty. No planes, no cars, no people, everything covered in mud, plants overgrown. So, you know, the question of the book is, why is he there? What kind of place is this? So the fact that it's that metaphor of waking up in an empty world, coupled with the idea of not quite fitting in, both of those are extremely teenage concerns. Because I've always thought the MO of a teenager, even popular ones, is to feel different. That's just what it is to be a teenager. And that can be good, it can be bad. But it can also feel so lonely when you think that nobody understands it. So, you know, here we have a boy waking up in an empty world, and how much lonelier can you get? You can't get any lonelier. But of course, that's not the loneliness that bothers him. It's a different kind. And just also being the boy who came from somewhere else in his high school, every kid feels like that. Even the popular kids feel like that. And so they're just good ways to represent an internal teenage emotional state.
And then the two teenagers that he meets in this empty world that he thinks is empty anyway, also bring their own feelings and senses of being so terribly alone in the world.
Yeah, which I think is just any teenager anywhere recognize that feeling. And it was so important that they're called Regine and Tomáš. And they were just so important because the whole theme of the book is seeing that there is, well, I mean, it's in the title, seeing that there's more. And I've always said that the blessing and the curse of being young is that whatever you feel takes up all the space you have, which is great. So that's why the young feel invincible when they're feeling good, because you can't think, can't conceive of feeling any other way. But when things are bad, it sucks all the air out of the room, and it feels like it will never change, that how bad you feel now is how bad you will always feel. And so a big, big theme of the book is just to say what you are feeling is real, and it's serious, and I'm not dismissing it. And I think the worst thing you can say to a teenager who's having a difficult time is you'll grow out of it. Well, you will grow out of it, but that's completely beside the point, because you're not going to grow out of it this afternoon. You've still got to go through it, and it's still painful. So it's to acknowledge that, you know, that teenage pain is real pain. But it's saying that in addition to that, there is more. There is something else. There is something, there's always something apart from yourself. There's always a different point of view you can take. And so when he meets Regine and Tomáš, they are completely different from him, and they aren't people who he'd imagine. So this question of, am I in an imagined place, is thrown into question again, because he meets these two people that he wouldn't come up with. And it's, again, it's just a way to say there's always more. Even if you think that's impossible, there's always more. There's always an additional thing you can feel. It doesn't replace the bad feeling, but you can feel it alongside it. And that complication, well, that's what growing up is.
I was going to say, that's a very adult way of thinking about it. And one of the things that happens to Seth is that he comes to realize that in some way by the end of the book, that there is more, and he's on that road, even though he's dead.
Maybe,
because that's a whole nother plot twist.
Yeah.
But, you know, he comes to that point where he does make that realization. It's like, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
There is another door to open.
Yeah, which is that, I mean, that to me is the process of growing up. And I've written in different ways about this. I mean, in A Monster Calls, to me, that's a book about acknowledging that you can believe contradictory things and still live, still somehow find a way to live your life, that you're believing two things that can't coexist. And it's kind of the same thing. It's just understanding that, not diminishing a problem, but he learns, like, okay, I have another way to look at what's happened to me. And why couldn't the easier way to look at it be just as true as the most painful version? Why does the most painful version have to be the truth? So yeah, I think he really does. I hope he really does. So I think I say that as growing up, but I say that as if all adults have this magical thing where we all go, oh yes, oh yeah, I get perspective all the time. Of course we don't. It's an ongoing thing, but this is a good first step.
I was going to say, as you were talking about that, what was making me smile was the idea that we all have to learn that over and over and over.
Over and over and over and over again.
I don't think you ever learn it for good.
No, and you know, and good. Because, you know, I think we're just really appealing messes. And I think we'd be a lot less interesting if we weren't. And that we make mistakes, that we make the same mistakes. And sometimes you learn. But I don't know. It's all part of being human. And what more glorious thing is that than that?
A friend of mine says we all learn the hard way or not at all.
Yeah. Yeah. And often not at all. But
yes, and often
not at all.
No,
an easy lesson is never taken. Yeah.
No. You were here talking to high school students. Is that correct?
Yeah, I've just done I've been on a book tour. And so I've done some book festivals and stuff on the East Coast and D.C. and Manhattan and Brooklyn. And I was in St. Louis, and for the past several days, I have been talking to huge groups of teenagers, including this morning here in Milwaukee. And it was, I think there were 1,000 yesterday when I was in North Chicago, and today there were about 500. And they were a great group. They were a great group today.
How are they responding to this idea, these ideas that you bring forth in your books?
Most of the ones I've been talking to have done big school reads of A Monster Calls, actually. It's kind of the same kind of stuff. And they respond really well. They love that. You know what it is? They just love that somebody's taking them seriously. And they love that somebody is talking to them rather than down at them. And in fact, somebody said that today, you know, that I was treating them like I would talk to anybody. And what a relief that is. And what joy you can get from a teenager like that. And I know whenever anybody thinks of teenagers, they think of their own teenagers. And well, your own teenagers are only like that to you, you know. To the rest of the world, they're interesting and different and curious and nice and fun. And they're probably like that to you as well. But so I don't know. I get the best of them. I get the best of them because for an hour, I'm neither their parent nor their teacher. And so I have some fun, and I talk right to them, and I...
And you talk about difficult things. You talk about death.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about that sadness. You talk about that sense of isolation, mm-hmm. of never feeling connected, or that you never will be connected. And as you say, take them seriously.
I do, and then I also tell them naughty jokes. So...
Which I'm
together.
Sure they love,
yes,
too.
They absolutely love. And you know, and they also, when they... Because they always want to test your boundaries, and they always want to challenge you. So I bite back. So, and it works. It's great. It's good fun. And they really were glorious today. And they really, really were very interested about, like, they wanted to know what happens to Connor after the end of Monster Calls. And they want to know, you wrote a tough book about war. You know, why? You know, why did you want to talk about that? They want to know. And they are always thinking about heavy things, dark things. And I have said over and over and over again, whenever my books have sometimes been accused of being dark or, you know, too old for teenagers. Well, one, all you have to do is read what a teenager writes. Teenage fiction that they write themselves is much darker than anything any YA author would ever, ever publish. And so I think that to not address dark stuff is to abandon a teenager and leave them to fend for themselves. And I think that's the immoral position. Because if I can engage, if I can tell the truth about what's dark, I can say, yes, I know, I take you seriously. But there's also this. When I say, but there's also this, they'll believe me because I haven't lied about what's difficult. And I don't know, isn't the truth always the best option?
I think so.
Well, yeah, sometimes.
Sometimes.
Yeah, most of the time. Most of the time. Certainly in fiction.
Well, and I'd say in life, too. I mean, it's not always the easiest.
No,
it's usually not.
Yeah.
But I would
tact and style.
Yeah, exactly. There's ways of telling the truth.
There is an art, indeed.
Yeah, and there's an art, I think, sometimes to telling the truth that helps make sometimes unpalatable things a little more accessible, maybe.
Yeah. Well, and when you're 13, 14, you feel constantly like you're being lied to. And part of that is because part of the time you are, you know, people think you're too young to know. So the truth gets bent. And it's that awful stretch of life where you know more than you should. And should is a dangerous word always. But it's like in A Monster Calls. Of course, Connor knows exactly what's going on with his ill mother. Nobody wants to tell him the truth. And he doesn't really want to hear it. Of course he knows. And in More Than This, in the new book, Seth is just... He knows way more what's going on in his life than his parents do, and they have no idea. And that is so common. And, you know, maybe sometimes it's necessary just to find your own way. But I don't know, just engage with a teenager. I say engage with a teenager as an equal, and people all immediately take umbrage. But you know what I mean. Just talk to them. Don't immediately assume you know what their answer is going to be. Don't immediately assume that they're going to give you attitude. Ask a question, a genuine question. Might be surprised.
They're human beings.
Totally.
And we all went through it.
Uh-huh. And I don't know why adults forget it so easily. We shouldn't.
I think maybe because it's painful.
Yeah, but like childbirth, you sort of block out the pain. You know, that's why we don't remember pain as a species, because, you know, we would never do anything if we remembered pain. So, I don't know. Have some compassion for your teenage self. I think that's the start.
What is it about that time frame that appeals to you as a writer? What are you able to explore that you couldn't explore, say, with quote unquote adult fiction?
Well, it's a borderland, and borderlands are always interesting for fiction. Always, always, always. So much fiction is about one borderland or another, crossing a border, mixing a border, the falling of a border, and it's just a very, very interesting one. The steps from childhood to adulthood. Teenagers are such a great audience to write for because they are far less snobby than adult readers can be. And there, of course, there are some unsnobby adult readers, but teenagers as a group, they just want to be told a good story. They don't care where it goes, what it's about. They just want it to be good and real and something they could relate to. And so what freedom is that? I mean, that's a great bargain to make. Yes, I will respect you, and in return, you'll follow me to wherever I take the story. What a great deal to make with a reader. It's the best kind of deal. So,
and you can't do that with adults?
You have to do it in a different way. The agreement has to be much more subtle, and it has to be... there's much more cajoling and much more convincing. And I don't mind that. That's absolutely fine. But with a teenager, they just want a rollicking good tale. So if you can do that, then you can slip in all the stuff you want. You can slip in all the themes you want. You can slip in all the jokes you want. And it's just fun. It's liberating. It's liberating. I mean, I'll continue to write for adults and teens, when, you know, whatever the idea dictates. But I love it. And again, trying not to be a snob about it.
So tell me a little bit about the book that's coming out in January for adults.
It's called The Crane Wife. It is based on a Japanese folktale called The Crane Wife. And the folktale is about a sailmaker, who finds an injured crane with an arrow through its wing. And it saves the crane. And then the crane flies off. And the next day, a woman enters the sailmaker's life. They fall in love. They marry. She says, I will weave sails for you that you can sell, but you can't watch me weave. And so she weaves sails. She weaves all these beautiful sails. They grow richer and richer and richer. And the man's greed gets the best of him. And he breaks down the door while she's weaving to demand that she weave more. And of course, she's been the crane all along, weaving the sails from her feathers. And seeing her breaks the spell, and she flies away, and it's a tragic ending. The book starts at the same place. It starts with a man, another expatriate American, living in London, who finds an injured crane in his back garden with an arrow through its wing somehow in the middle of freezing London. And he takes the arrow from his wing and it flies away. And the next day, a woman enters his life. And the stories diverge from there. I'm not really interested in material greed, but sort of maybe emotional greed. How is a nice man greedy? And I think it's the greed for what we all are greedy for when we fall in love. You want to know that it's true. You're greedy for knowledge that it's true. And it gets him in trouble. But I think it's a fun book, and I think it's a funny book, and I think it's a warm book. And that's a nice thing to write now and again.
Exactly.
Yeah, a funny book now and again. I hope people like it.
Patrick Ness, as always, such a pleasure. And thank you so much for stopping by. I know you're on your way to points. When do you get home?
A few days from now. I'm nearly at the end. So I think it's time for a bunch of sleep is what I think it's time for. Yeah, yeah. I have two books out in about 6 months apart. That's a lot of books.
That's a lot of books, and it's a lot of travel.
Yeah.
Well, thank you again for stopping by.
My absolute pleasure.
Patrick Ness's latest novel for young adults is called More Than This. Ness's previous work has won awards, including the Carnegie Medal and the Galaxy National Book Award in the UK. He spoke with Bonnie North on a recent trip to Milwaukee.